In the spring every year, I teach a sermon class. It's for those who'd like to do summer services. This isn't an announcement. I'm just letting you know that. In the class, we talk about the purpose of doing services on Sunday. And there are a variety of different kinds of services. There can be a pastoral service that's designed to bring comfort. There can be what some would call, in probably a different denomination, fire and brimstone service that are supposed to motivate you to action. There are informational services that teach Unitarian Universalist history. But to me, the primary purpose for coming together on Sunday is to facilitate an opening for a moment of transformation. What that means is that services are designed to bring us together, to address a certain topic, to facilitate without the demands of a uniform dogma or creed, a little opening for us to make a leap of our own, a change of understanding, a little thought that might even lead to a shift of consciousness that moves us from one place to another and helps somehow, perhaps, with the healing, wholeness, and transformation of ourselves, each other, or the planet. That's simply pretty much what we try to do at each and every service. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. There are things that I wish for the world and I wish for the congregation. I would like for us all to be aware of our own privilege and how that affects our thoughts and actions in the world. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean that some of us have the good fortune to be able to have a significant amount of money, which allows a great deal of freedom. For instance, there are children of members of this congregation who didn't or won't have to think twice about their ability to go to college. Much of their decision will be about not if they go to college, but where and when, based on their grades or preferences. Even the ability to go on college tours is a privilege that many can't afford. A transformative moment could be if we did something in a service that brought forth a story or example of how someone without much money had a much more limited ability to attain higher education and what they might have to do to achieve that goal. Now, because we're a religious community, specifically a Unitarian Universalist religious community, we might explore this element of privilege from a variety of different angles. For example, we might look at long-term systemic injustices associated with class and race, systems that have benefited some while keeping others in lives of struggle. We might look at the moral implications of the cost of higher education and student loans. We might even look at something like, how can we be grateful for the sacrifices of those who gave so much so that so many of us can achieve this opportunity to attend institutions of higher learning? Now, a service would never be designed to tell us to be grateful, to guilt us about being mindful of our privilege, or to insist we help those who haven't benefited from a systemic or unearned privilege that we may have received. But it would ask you to think about it, to reflect on it, to explore it, to meditate on it, maybe even to pray about it. This would be done because there is always hope that we will have some thought, some moment, perhaps some epiphany that might help us transform or shift consciousness for the way we live our lives in order to be kinder, more compassionate, less judgmental, more understanding of our own framework, more open to the understanding thoughts or feelings or motivations of others, and maybe more just, and of course, if possible, more loving. And why, do you ask? Why is this the least bit important? Why do we think this needs to happen? Well, it's not just your minister, me, telling you this. These are messages that run throughout our history. Let me give you some refreshers. Maya Angelou said this: "There were people who went to sleep last night, poor and rich, white and black, but they will never wake again. And those dead folks would give anything at all just for 5 minutes of this weather or 10 minutes of plowing. So watch yourself about complaining. What you're supposed to do when you don't like a thing is change it. If you can't change it, maybe change the way you think about it." And from author Donald Miller, when he talked about his friend Marco, he said, "My friend Marco said, essentially humans are alive for the purpose of journey, a kind of three-act structure. They're born and spend several years discovering themselves in the world, then plod through a middle in which they are compelled to search for a mate and perhaps reproduce and also create stability out of a natural instability. And then they find themselves at an ending, which seems to be designed for reflection. At the end, their bodies are slower. They're not as easily distracted. They do less work and they feel and think about life lived rather than looking forward to getting started. He didn't know what the point of the journey was, but he did believe we were designed to search for and find something. And he wondered out loud if the point wasn't the search, but the transformation the search creates. I wondered," said Donald Miller, "that we were designed to live through something rather than to attain something. And the thing we were meant to live through was designed to change us. The point of the story is the character arc," he said. "It's the change." And Robert Kennedy said, "Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total, all of those acts will be written in the history of a generation." And then this one you might have heard from Martin Luther King: "An individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity." Now, maybe if this were some other kind of religious organization, we would follow a strict code of adherence. Or maybe we would be practicing a sort of faith that is completely individualistic. But neither of those things are true. Universalist minister Henry Clay Leonard said it this way. He said, "The mission of the Universalist Church has been a double one. First, to controvert the one-time prevalent idea of an endless hell. More important, one awaits fulfillment, a fight, which shall continue until the real, actual hells before our eyes are destroyed." This faith is about shift happening. It's about shift happening in our personal life. It's about shift happening in our congregations. It's about shift happening in the world. Last month, we talked about hope. This month, we're talking about transformation. I think hope is a very difficult thing to feel right now if we don't believe that shift or transformation is possible. And when thinking about transformation out there, it's always important to understand what kind of transformation we need in here and in here. So I'm going to ask you 4 questions today. You don't need to answer them out loud, but I invite you to consider them. So question number 1 is, what shift am I resistant to now that I know in my heart needs transformation? What shift am I resistant to now that I know in my heart needs transformation? Question number 2 is, what's stopping me from transforming? Question number 3 is, what was a moment of shift in my life when I realized I needed to change? And I actually made a change that made me a more open and loving person. And question number 4 is, how did that feel? These certainly could be very personal questions about personal things in our lives. The answer to these questions could be about relationships, jobs, education, aging, spirituality, or a wide variety of things. But they could also be about prejudice, classism, or thinking you're better than others because of money or education. Or it could be about not listening to others, thinking that you often have the right answer. Or perhaps, understandably, a fear of risking comfort and safety to directly take action that may rise above the narrow confines of our individualistic concerns to benefit all of humanity. Transformation isn't easy, but shift can happen and does happen all the time. Although defining completely the process of how shift happens might be impossible, I can tell you what I observed and what I learned in part from creating a curriculum on the subject called Shift Happens that I talked about in a sermon 2.5 years ago, which no one remembers, right? In an update of my observations from then, there appear to be 4 elements that help us with the process of shift happening. These are believing that there is more to the world than just us, engaging and reflecting with otherness, allowing time for change to take hold, and being intentional about having a place for change to happen. There's more to the world than just us. It can be known by many names. It can be having a sense of God, that which is sacred, divine, or holy. Or it can be as uncomplicated as having an understanding of our connection to all things. This is not just an understanding of our interconnection, but also an understanding of our interdependence. There's not one thing that we use, eat, drive, type on, purchase, or view that hasn't been compiled, built, raised, prepared, or manufactured without people from all different classes, races, religious, or ideological systems. So that's understanding that there's something more to the world than us. The second thing is engaging in reflecting otherness. What is the other? It is that which is outside of us, the inconvenient, the irrational, the unknown, the disowned, the unlikely, the overlooked, the strange, the stranger, the ghettoed, the asides, the unorthodox, the heretical, the uncomfortable, the political opposite, the religious adherent, and that which can be known by so many other names. We like to hang in our tribe. That which we already feel comfortable with. We like to be around the like-minded. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that here. We like to preach to the choir, as Emma's Revolution sang to us last Saturday night. But it's much harder to work and wade into that unfamiliar pool, whatever it may look like and however it may feel, in order for any of us to be transformed. It may take doing something different from what we always do, see, feel, and think. The third thing is allowing for change to take hold. We live in a society that seems to demand everything happen quickly. So much information, so fast. Fast statements, fast mistakes, fast corrections, and many fast celebrity apologies. I don't think fast can always lead to long-term shift. I've come to believe shift comes from a series of events that brings us to a specific point in time, a time where we're ready to make a decision. Things like voting out another party may provide a change in direction in the country, but if we're going to live together with such diverse views, perhaps a long-term strategic view of engagement with other may help us support more sustainable change, like the change through heart and mind. And 2.5 years ago, I said, there must be intention, an intention to create an open space for this work to be done. I said an open, safe, cooperative space is a container to hold what is emerging and evolving from the previous 3 things I just talked about. And I'll tell you what I've come to realize is that it won't always be safe or cooperative. But intentional is really important. I have to go back with a Selma reference. The strategy of the civil rights movement did have all of these things. They knew there was more to the world than just them. It had been beaten into them for so many years. And then they constantly engaged and reflected on otherness because they had been felt. They had been made to feel like the other for so long. They allowed time for changes to take hold. They started very early and worked for so long and so hard and still do. We still do work for this. And certainly, the civil rights movement was intentional. But the places where the change happened wasn't always safe and comfortable. And there's one vital piece of this puzzle that I haven't mentioned, this puzzle of shift, this deep change. And I really believe it can't happen without the power of story. There's such a power in telling your story and listening to the story of others. This is where the change, the shift can reside. There's transformation present through the seeking of others' stories and the telling of stories, especially if we want to visit the edges of our awareness and our comfort, where so many of these experiences reside. I just have one more quote for you today. It's from Marianne Williamson. The quote is, "Personal transformation can and does have global effects. As we go, so goes the world, for the world is us. The revolution that will save the world is ultimately a personal one. Let that revolution begin. May that be so, and amen."